Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Live in the Library. Our guest this evening is Mel Martin with a great band she'll introduce.
Here with me in the band is Given Arnold on bass, Jim Crumble on the drums, Stephen Powers on guitar, and Kosh Wright on the keys. We hope you enjoy.
You go to my head and you linger like a haunting refrain. And I find you spinning round in my brain, like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like the kicker in a julep or two. The thrill of the thought that you might give a thought to my plea casts a spell over me. Still I say to myself, get a hold of yourself. Can't you see that it never can be? 'Cause you go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise, like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my head. Thank you. Like a summer with a thousand Julys, you intoxicate my soul with your eyes. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't the ghost of a chance. On a cool, damp night, gave myself to that misty light. Was hypnotized by strange delight. Wonder a lilac tree. I made wine from the lilac tree. Put my heart in its recipe. It makes me see what I want to see. Be what I want to be. When I think more than I want to think, I do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink, because it brings me back you. Lilac wine is sweet and heady like my love. Lilac wine, I feel unsteady like my love. Listen to me, I cannot see clearly. Isn't that she coming to me? Thank you. to me, why is everything so hazy? Isn't that she? Or am I just going crazy? Lilac wine, I feel unready for my love. Feel unready. You don't know what love is until you've learned the meaning of the blues, until you've loved a love you had to lose. You don't know what love is. Until you've kissed and had to pay the cost, until you've flipped your heart and you have lost. Oh, you don't know what love is. Do you know thought of reminiscing and eyelids, the taste of tears lose their taste for kissing. You don't know how hearts burn for a love that cannot live yet never dies. Until you face each dawn with sleepless eyes. Oh, you don't know what love is. Thank you. Until you've flipped your heart and you have lost all you don't know what love is. Do you know how a lost heart feels? The thought of reminiscing. Cannot live, yet never dies. Until you faced each dawn with sleepless eyes. Oh, you don't know what love is. I get too hungry for dinner at 8. I like the theater, but I never come late. I never bother with the people I hate. That's why this lady is a tramp. I don't like crap games with barons and earls. Won't go to Harlem in ermine and pearls. I won't dish the dirt with the rest of the girls. That's why this lady is a tramp. I like the free, fresh wind in my hair. Life without care. I'm broke, it's oak. Hey, California, it's cold and it's damp. That's why the lady is a tramp. Thank you.
That's a great band. Is this the band with whom you regularly perform these days?
They're phenomenal musicians. They tend to be the house band at the Barking Lakes for the Jazz Jam. So that's how I met these guys. And I was thrilled that they were all available for this session because they were just splendid to play with.
And you'd already gotten a little comfortable with them at least.
Yeah, we'd had the chance to play together several times.
You haven't been here very long. You moved here from Boston, didn't you?
In February. Chattanooga's a wonderful city. We've really just been enjoying being here. Well, I grew up in California and then moved to Chicago and then moved to Boston and moved to here. So I've lived all over. And you know, the one thing that I've noticed about Chattanooga, for the most part, most of the people I've met really like being here. I know that sounds really strange, but I've lived all over the country and this is the first place where people are actually enthusiastic about where they live and the local community. And I just find that so delightful. It really warms my heart, really. I've enjoyed that.
I think a lot of people feel they have an investment. You know, this is their city that didn't exist until their generation.
Yeah.
It's a city that's being reborn.
I hear both things. I hear the optimism and enthusiasm for the future. I've also met quite a few people who are getting priced out of the area because of that. Yeah. The removal, the replacement of those marginalized neighborhoods and the gentrification. And so there's a bittersweet aspect to this, right, for a lot of people, especially people who grew up here and who've lived here a long time. You know, and I'm aware of the jazz community over at the Barking Legs that I've really been enjoying in the space that it's Bruce and Ann, right?
Mm-hmm.
The space that Bruce and Ann have created there for musicians and people of all walks of life to come together. It's, I would say, in my experience, it's one of the most integrated spaces in Chattanooga that I've seen, which is really phenomenal that it's there. It also makes me conscious that as a white jazz musician, making music in a historically black musical city, I need to pay homage to that legacy and work to be part of it and celebrate it and not compete with it, not try to ignore it. But that's a really hard thing to do.
It is. I guess it's always going to be a somewhat complex relationship.
Yeah. Jazz does have this ethereal quality of bringing people together, and it always has. Back when, before nightclubs were desegregated, black musicians were allowed to come in as musicians and play, and the musicians themselves worked very hard through musicians' guilds to incorporate. And it's really important to see the social justice aspect of that to me in the legacy of this music. And so as jazz musicians today, a lot of us consider ourselves historians, not just performers. And the meaning of that social justice embedded inside the music itself, that this is not an erasure of, this is not a colorblind approach. This is a true integration celebration of diversity that we get to participate in and we get to love and celebrate. That is what brings a lot of meaning for it to me.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge, it seems to me, for somebody like yourself is how do you get inside a form of music that is largely African-American?
It is largely African-American. It is also largely Jewish-American. Musicians from all over the world really have shaped this art form. And yes, it does have strong Afro-Cuban roots and strong roots in the post-war Reconstruction era. And in Jim Crow. So I think for me, it's about learning the history of the songs and the composers and the people who wrote these songs and why they wrote these songs and the kinds of things that they were expressing and or escaping, and to hold that and to hold that together with the joy that those musicians also brought to their music. It's an act of rebellion to stand up and say, I'm a human being, a full human being who gets to have a range of expression. You don't get to decide how I express myself. You don't get to decide who I am to you. I will be who I am. And that is a multifaceted human being. And music can do that for us.
I agree. Jazz has had an interesting history for that reason as much as anything. It has always been an expression, a musical expression, that's driven by musicians, for better or worse. There was a time when it was the popular music of America. Then people like Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker took it to a place that a lot of people couldn't go because you couldn't dance to it, for one thing. And it became more of a listening music. I'm not sure what it is now. I think it's kind of a hybrid, isn't it? It can go either way. And the influence of hip-hop in contemporary jazz seems to be taking it back toward the mainstream. That's music you can dance to again.
What I do in Great American Songbook stuff is really, I think for a lot of people, seen as kind of a relic of the past, something quaint and nostalgic. And when I first started singing, actually, I really leaned into that. I had like the retro hair and the makeup and everything. And as I've started learning more about the history of jazz, I learned that really jazz in its day was the punk rock movement of music.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, it was total rebellion. It was total anarchy, taking everything we knew about music and putting it in a blender and adding in some magic and seeing what weird thing comes out, you know, or making it the most beautiful thing you could possibly make it. But syncopating rhythms and using swing was seen as completely rebellious, you know, in the day. So thinking about jazz is a cultural statement, not something that's a relic, not something that we're, you know, going to quaintly tap back into, but seeing it as something we push forward. And even if we perform songs of the past, to bring them to today. You know, Herbie Hancock is really famous for doing a lot of this genre bending stuff. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool to mix in funk beats and Latin beats and hip hop beats and making it as fresh as you possibly can. And then you have the new generation of musicians, jazz musicians like Jacob Collier or Snarky Puppy, who are taking it to another degree, to another level. And I think that captures the spirit of jazz almost more than people who are doing kind of impersonator work and trying to be Frank Sinatra. No offenses, if that's your jam, that's fine. And I've met plenty of great musicians who love doing that. But for me, what's exciting is to make this feel fresh again, even though it's a 100-year-old song.
So we come back to that question of, is it the singer or the song? And in my mind, it's always ultimately the song. And a song doesn't know any time frame. It's only the arrangement that creates the time frame.
Hmm.
If the song spoke to people in the 1920s, odds are, since human nature doesn't change that much, it probably still speaks to people. You just have to change the arrangement.
That's true. For a lot of people, this music sounds strange because we don't grow up making music together as much as we have done in almost every historical age past. And so a lot of people, you know, it's funny because I'll sing a song sometimes that I feel is very cliche for the jazz community. If you hear someone singing Fly Me to the Moon or Autumn Leaves, like as a jazz musician, I'm like, oh, please don't make me sing it. I've heard it a million times. But there are a lot of people out there, a lot of people who don't know those songs. And for them, it's fresh. And so I think if I'm a musical historian, my job is to keep this music alive for future generations and make it fun and exciting for new people to experience.
There was that point, you know, in the late 40s when for many people, jazz became inaccessible. They couldn't understand it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Those songs you're talking about predate that period.
Yeah, but free jazz got real weird. Right. And I agree with you. A lot of people couldn't relate to it. And I don't know that from an artistic perspective, we should say that art shouldn't be because the people can't understand it, right? They're doing things musically that are so far beyond, you know, you're talking about like the equivalent of sending someone to the moon, but with musical theory.
Exactly.
Right? And that's cool. That's a cool pursuit just for itself.
It is.
It takes us into the outer space of music and what music can or can't do. It depends on what the music is intended for. Is the music intended for us to listen and enjoy it, right? And I think enjoyment and appreciation don't always have to go hand in hand. I've actually had friends who've studied music at really great music schools who said they've regretted going because it's ruined their taste buds for anything that has popular sentiment and any of their artistic inclinations for what they thought was beautiful and creative before they went to school kind of got crushed in that process. And I think it's sad to turn musicians into automatons through academia. And I'm a very academically focused person, but I did actually choose not to study music, not for those reasons. I was pursuing other things, but I don't know as much as I would know if I had studied music in school. And as a self-taught musician, the learning curve is much more rocky because you have to figure things out on your own. But in a way, I'm glad because I think I'm glad that my taste buds haven't been fully ruined because I do think it's neat to be able to connect with people on a popular music level. I think it's neat.
I do too. I agree.
I won't apologize for it.
No. There's that intellectualization of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really dangerous because in the end, all art forms are largely primarily about feeling.
They are, and it's a language of the soul, right?
Right.
And to what degree can you rationalize language of the soul?
You can't.
You have to let that language be its own language. I was actually recently in the studio working on my rock album, which is coming out soon. And I was talking to the engineer who was going to lay down some guitar tracks, and I said, can you just make this feel like a weird orange shag carpet? And he was like, what are you talking about? But, you know, really, as musicians, sometimes we really do struggle for the language to express something that's completely unexpressible. You're trying to talk about something with human words and human rationality that is beyond definition. That's why music is the only thing that can do it. But something very cool occurred to me. I did learn something very recently that was just the coolest thing that I think I've ever heard about music. So the Earth's atmosphere is the only place where the density of oxygen and carbon dioxide in our atmosphere can transmit sound waves that are musical. So any other planet, if you go to Venus, you can try to make sound, but because of the way sound waves have to go through air and through an atmosphere, it won't sound the same. So Earth is really the only known place in the universe where music is possible. How cool is that? That is so cool. It might be the simplest note, but if it touches someone's soul, then who are we to judge that academically, right? You can be the most learned person in the world, but I think to circle back around to the beauty of simplicity and emotional connection, there's no replacement for that. There's no dissertation that can cover what that means and to actually accomplish that.
No, and I think that in the end, it's what you feel, because what you are feeling is what you are communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go back to the challenge that you have in performing a song like Autumn Leaves that has been, I hesitate to say overperformed, but it really has, right? There have been too many jive versions of it, like there are so many garage band versions of the blues that it's really difficult to hear a 12-bar pattern as anything but an almost unlistenable cliche, you know?
Yeah, I know it is. And at the same time, how do we learn? And I think that's one of the hardest things for me about being a self-taught jazz musician. And even calling myself a jazz musician and the imposter syndrome that sets in because I don't have a fancy degree behind my name is the treatment that I've gotten from more established players and not being willing to help me grow and mentor me. And I was really lucky to find some incredible mentors, if I can give a quick shout out to Bill and Bo Winokur in Boston, musicians who've been playing jazz for over 50 years in the Boston area, Phil Sims in Leader of the Buffalo Brass, and Meredith D'Ambrosio, who is a world famous jazz artist who I've been so lucky to know and who have taken the time to really invest in me in ways that they didn't need to or have to, but they chose to. And I think that for artists who are more established to refuse to pass that forward when they've been the recipient of that kind of mentorship I don't think that's right. I think it's our responsibility, you know, to bring people up. And if the way you start out is playing Autumn Leaves, then that's the way you start out. I've always struggled with that idea. The first jazz song I ever sang in public was Misty. And, you know, the opening lines are, look at me, I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree, right? Also a cliche song. Also words that a lot of people would say, oh, that's kind of trite, right? But my jazz teacher at the time, I took a few lessons with this Brad Williams in Chicago, and he invited me to a piano bar where he was playing, and he said, why don't you sit in for a song? And I thought, oh my gosh, this is my big break. I'm going to go sing for these people. They're going to be so impressed, you know. And then I showed up, of course, nervous as all get out, because I'd sang a lot growing up in church, but I'd never sang a jazz song and been the showcase performer in public anywhere. So I show up, and he plays a few piano songs, and then he gives me a wonderful piano introduction, and I start singing those opening words, look at me. And everyone in the whole room turns around and looks at me because I just told them to look at me. I was mortified. The whole rest of the song, I think I sang like a whisper. I couldn't even handle the attention, you know? And so I think people forget once they've been doing this for a long time how terrifying it is to put yourself out there and how steep the learning curve is and how much effort it takes to just do it, you know? So I think, yes, I'm annoyed when I hear cliche songs, but I also remember that everyone is on their own path and we got to let people learn.
My gut reaction to that is the song isn't the cliche. It's the presentation of it that has become a cliche, because there are so many singers who sing lyrics like that without ever thinking about what they really mean. And so it's almost like they're sort of skating across the lyric, and they're not going to make any connection with you as a listener, because they're not making any connection with the lyric to begin with, so they've got nothing to communicate. So all they're communicating is this is a performance. It probably has to be said that Frank Sinatra bears a lot of responsibility for that, because Sinatra made, and arguably, you know, Bing Crosby before him, they made singing into a kind of conversation. And Sinatra will stand up there and he's loosened his tie and he's holding the microphone really close, and it's almost a hushed voice conversation, you know. And it works because he's such a great singer and because he understands the lyrics so well that becomes, that's that song. I never realized that's what that song was about, or I never, you know, engaged with that song like that before.
Yeah, a great performer will do that.
But we'll there are so many people that came after him who couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, all they could do was imitate him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're one step removed from the very beginning, because it's not really their approach to the song, it's somebody else's. Then it's a song that they don't necessarily completely understand. So before you know it, all of these unbelievable songs have become vehicles for rote performances by performers who mean well but aren't really communicating anything.
I agree with you, and I think that that's one area where pop music has done us a huge disservice. Because once you take a jazz performer, a jazz artist, and you take away the poetic interpretation of the words, and you take away the historical context of the music they're making, and you take away the emotional connection, what do you have left? You just have this parrot, you know, this automaton, singing all the right notes, maybe singing all the notes, right? It could be technically perfect, but completely free of any soul connection. And that, to me, is not jazz.
And that's your challenge as a singer, to be able to get behind the lyric, but also to find something in that lyric to which you can relate, so that when you sing it, it goes back to being a conversation again.
Right. I grew up as a minister's daughter, a music minister's daughter. So I grew up singing in church, singing gospel. And that has made me extremely uncomfortable with self-promotion and drawing attention to myself. But on the flip side, I always had this relationship with music growing up where music was not about me. It's not a narcissistic endeavor. The music is a gift we give to others, is a gift we give to God. It's about the lyric. It's about what you're communicating, what you're emoting. So if you grow up Pentecostal like me, you know, you get lost in this exploration of music. And there's a really strong tie between Pentecostal tradition and jazz, you know, with scatting and speaking in tongues and everything, because you have this connection to the music where you're asking yourself to be fully in the moment and not think ahead or not think behind, but just be there and see where the music takes you. And it has a lot of crossover. So I think that's really strengthened my perspective on how to interpret jazz music, you know, because sometimes you're making split-second decisions in that very moment. I'm not going to end the song. I'm going to keep it going. I'm going to swing it out. I'm going to let this be rubato. I'm going to feel this. And I think for me, the times when I've noticed people say that they feel the most connected to the music I make is when I'm the most connected to the music I'm making. It's like they channel my energy with it, my connection. And that is a bonkers thing to be responsible for, right? But it's one of the coolest reasons I love this genre.
Speak low when you speak love. Our summer day withers away too soon, too soon. Speak low when you speak love. A moment is swift, like ships adrift. We swept apart too soon. Speak low, darling, speak low. a spark lost in the dark. Too soon, I feel. Wherever I go, that tomorrow is here, tomorrow is near, and always too soon.
Love to me and soon.
You're talking so sweet, well, you need it. You say you won't cheat, well, you need it. You're tapping your feet, well, you need it. It's over now, it's over now. You're dressing with class, well, you need it. You're holding your sass, well, you need it. You think you're a guest, well, you need it. It's over now, it's over now. It's over now, it's over now. You had your fun, so take a bow. You ought to know you lost the flow. The beat is slow, the shadows flow, the lights are low. It's time to go, let's close the show down. You're taking off weight, well, you need it. You're looking just great, well, you need it. You're setting the bait, well, you need it. It's over now, it's over now.
Every kind of life,
stand before the candles on a cake. Let me be the one to hold the promises you make. Those tomorrows waiting deep in your eyes. In a world of love you keep in your eyes. I'll awaken what's asleep in your eyes. It may take a kiss or two. It may take a kiss or two. All of my life with you.